Nice to be back here. I haven't been for quite a few years. You know, my wife a couple of times stopped, but you got me, I'm afraid, today. Right. The basic story this morning is the Good Samaritan, a story which is well known to all of us. I just read it from Matthew. Sorry, from Luke. From Luke 10. Change glasses. I tried very focused, but couldn't get on with them. Luke 10, verse 25. And a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said to him, "What is written in the law? How does it read to you?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbour as yourself." And he said to him, this is Jesus, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." But, wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbour?" Then we go into a very familiar story of the Good Samaritan. Jesus replied and said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, and they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion. And he came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them, and put them on his own beast, and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I return, I will repay you.' Now, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbour to the man who fell among the robbers?" And he said to him, "The one who showed mercy towards him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do the same." Back in 1960, in December, I accepted Jesus as my saviour. That's been a long, long time. But my headline there is Salvation et Sec, which is a bit of a strange way, but we're talking about the law today, so it's a bit of a legal term. What follows on? What follows on from salvation? You become a Christian, but then you've got to go further on. So, let's start at the beginning and see if I can get this to work. So, what follows salvation? We've had some lovely songs this morning about what follows salvation, what we can do in our lives. Right, we start right at the beginning. Now, I worked with the law for many, many years. I was a copper in London for 27 years. The last 5 years was a teaching copper. So I was training people, and I had to know the law inside out, which obviously this Pharisee did. He knew the law inside out, but he's trying to work around it. But we start off with faith in Jesus. So that's the first place we start. We have faith in Jesus, but we've got to go on a journey. We've had quite a few of the songs that talked about the journey we've gone as Christians. Sanctification. Right, some very technical terms here. Sanctification, being made holy. Now, when people came to Jesus and said, "Good Master," he said, "Why do you call me good? Nobody is good but God." Well, we believe that Jesus was God. Yeah. We believe he is God and he's eternally God. But being good is reserved for God. I get a bit irritated when people say, when I say to people, "How are you?" and they say, "Oh, I'm good." That's a horrible Americanism. I've got an American daughter-in-law, so I've got used to all sorts of things. aluminium and all sorts of terms. But no, God is good. I'm fine. But somebody also told me fine stands for fouled up, insecure, neurotic and emotional. But it can be a cop-out, can't it? We work out learning to imitate Jesus. He's the one we imitate. And then we move on into discipleship. He said to make disciples of all men in Matthew 28. Go into the world and preach the gospel, making disciples. In other words, that's a regressive thing, learning to actually imitate Jesus. You've got to start to imitate him. And then once we've done that, we have to tell people about him. He said, you are my witnesses in this world. I obviously, being a copper, I was a witness many, many times at court. And one of the things you have to do is tell the truth, absolutely truth. Now, when you've been a Christian for years, you can mess up in things. I know that too much. But the truth is that Jesus is the one. Yeah. He is the one who saves us. He is the one who sanctifies us. He's the one who brings us through all sorts of problems. And he expects us to tell people about that. So we're looking at the law today. This lawyer came to Jesus and wanted to know what the law actually said. And Jesus said, well, you tell me what you interpret as. And he went through everything. But what the law can do is several things. It can make us aware of God's standards. The law in Deuteronomy and Leviticus and Exodus set a standard. It shows what God's standard is. God's standard is perfect, it is pure, it is holy. Completely different from our standards.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of things with this post office scandal, haven't we? What a load of tosh, you know. People have been ducking and diving to cover their own backs. No, that's not the truth. I just want to see what comes out, because people have been stitching up other people left, right and centre here. It's dreadful. So, when we know what God's standards is, we can then look at our own lives and realise how much we fall short. Yeah? We all fall short. Yeah. The word that is often translated as sin is missing the mark. We miss the mark. And a miss is as good as a mile. Yeah. We always fall short of God's standards. And the law also makes us aware that we cannot match up in our own strength. We cannot match God's standards anyway in our own strength. Simple as that. The law can do some things. It can give us knowledge, but what it can't do is make us right with God. We cannot follow the law. If you fall short in one area, you haven't followed the law. Simple as that. So it can't make us right with God. Being made right with God means we can be right with each other, which is also very important, isn't it? Because God is a God of relationships.
Yeah.
Relationships, relationships, relationships. Last night I had my son's dog to look after. Dogs are very relational, aren't they?
Yeah.
Cats are territorial. They like to be in a particular place, but dogs are very, very relational. She goes absolutely berserk when my son comes back. She loves being with him. She loves being with people. She is relational, and God is relational. God wanted to be back with us in relation. The relation that was broken in the Garden of Eden, God wanted to restore it. And he sent Jesus for that, didn't he? Yeah, good. It took us broken. Right. to work from my notes, which are basically on PowerPoint anyway. We can't make it thrust with each other. The law cannot do that. And it cannot restore relationships with God and fellow people. Doing a great job there, Paul, but it did work earlier. Slide number four. Ron is to the rescue.
It's Kate.
Restore relationships. You know, if somebody's burgled your house, do you really want a relationship with that burglar, even though he's been punished by law? It doesn't restore that relationship, and it doesn't give us everlasting life. That comes through Jesus, through the cross, through resurrection, and relationship with Jesus. But laws have a downside as well. People love having a rule. It is I'm following the rules, I'm doing exactly what I'm meant to be doing, and that is exactly what Jesus was fighting against in his life. The lawyers knew the law inside out, and they interpreted it very differently sometimes. But people love having a rule book. I can't be doing it wrong, I'm following the rules. Well, 1946, 1947, in Nuremberg in Germany. Yeah. There was a horrible series of trials of the Nazis. And the defence, of course, was I was only following orders. Well, I'm told there's no evidence that any SS, SA, SD, etc., all the security forces got punished or killed because they didn't obey orders. Simple as that. It's not a valid defence, is it? I was only obeying orders. It's an ultimate cop-out, completely. Then there's the Jobsworth attitude. We all know what Jobsworth's like, haven't we? Yeah. I hope we haven't got any Jobsworth here. Yeah. I know it's unpleasant, but it's the law. You know, I've got to treat you like this, yeah. And I see them on the little motorbikes running around putting tickets on. Otherwise, I should have really mentioned that. But motorists is an easy cash cow, isn't it? And unfortunately, yeah, they do. I know it's unpleasant, but it's the law, the Jobsworth attitude. And then, I'd love to help you out, but the law won't let me. That's what the Pharisees were like. You know, Jesus' disciples were getting grain when they were walking through a field and making food with it. And the Pharisees picked on them. Why are you letting your disciples work on the Sabbath? But Jesus said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.
Yeah.
So I'd love to help you, but it's a Pharisaical cop-out. Then we come to our story, the Good Samaritan. We all know it very well. It's a phrase we use often in everyday life. I was a Good Samaritan. Helping them like that, etc. Now, why have we got these strange mixtures? They live basically in the same area. Have any of you been to Israel? You know that Jericho and Nablus were part of the Samaritan area. Why were they separated? They were serving the same God, that had a different history though. The Jews worshipped God in the temple in Jerusalem. But when Jesus was coming across the Samaritan woman in John 4, she said, why don't you so worship in the same place as we did? Because many, many years ago, when the children of Israel were coming out of the wilderness, God told them to worship in Mount Gerizim. Well, the Samaritans held back to that. They had different histories. Quite a few of the Jews were taken to Babylon, and they came back and they formed the Samaritans. They worshipped different things, and they picked up a lot of rubbish in Babylon. Babylonian worship, Babylonian gods, etc. That's why they were separate. And the Jews believed they picked up those practices and were using them. The Samaritans were harking back to God's original instruction to worship on Mount Gerizim. That was quite a few thousand years before, when Moses had brought the children of Israel out of the wilderness. They were hanging back to old practices. How many of us can hang on to old practices? You know, it seemed good at the time, but you know, God has moved on since then. Right, we know the situation. We've got a man on the road. Jerusalem to Jericho is quite a rocky road. It's a real rough area, say the least. The victim was left for dead. As far as people knew, he was dead. And then we get the people come along, the priest comes along, and he wanted to follow the rule. Because anybody who touches a dead body in Jewish law was unclean. And if he was going to the temple to do his duty, he would not be allowed to do it. So he wasn't really bothered about the person who'd been victimized. He wanted to go and carry on his duties. He walked by. He passed by on the other side. That's a phrase we use in English sometimes, isn't it? Now, the Levite was somebody who assisted in the temple. And he did the same. I'm not having my day messed up by being unclean and not going to get my shekels or whatever he got for his duty. But he did the same. Then the hero of the story arrives. Samaritan. He would be aware that the person was a Jew. And, Samaritans and Jews had no dealings with each other in John 4. But he put that aside. Probably the way they dressed was different. You know, you got back in the 60s, modern rockers, they certainly dress differently, didn't they? Being a motorbiker for many, many years. Yeah. Anyway, he would have been aware that he was a Jew. And he put the rule book aside and he helped in a big way. He really did help in a big way. We all know people who've got deep pockets and short arms. Steve knows who I'm thinking of as well. They never get their hand in their pocket. But the Samaritan deep. Two denarii is two silver coins, which are probably worth quite a bit in those days. He risked attack. He stopped. Were the robbers still around? Yeah. That's something he had to consider. Was he possibly going to get banged on the head himself and his donkey and everything? But he risked the attack. He made his journey easier by putting the wounded man on his donkey, on his beast, it said. Putting his hand in his own pocket. Yeah, that's very important. Because we all know people who are very, very tight with money. And also, I know we've got some friends who are literally millionaires, but they're very, very generous. It says an awful lot about them, doesn't it? So, Jesus showed the attitude he had towards in many ways. Jesus was aware of the law, but his attitude to rules were, first of all, put God first. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your might, etc., etc. That was Jesus, put that first. And then, next, is help the needy, the weak, and the victims. Jesus was always there to help. And that's very important, isn't it? Obviously, I saw many, many victims in the police, and I got quite angry at the way some of them were treated, to say the least. But Jesus put God and then his neighbour. Now, the Jews have had these laws since the time of Moses, in the first five books in the Old Testament. But over the years, people had said, what about this, what about that, what about, what if? And Jesus said, if your donkey falls down a well on the Sabbath, you help it out. By the time that this arrived, or this happened, Jesus knew that there had been a lot of interpretation of the law. The Pharisees and the scribes wanted to stick to the law, the strict letter of the law. But there was far more important things, the victims, the animals, those sort of things. And the lawyers would have known, the Pharisee, the priest, and the Levite would have known that there were exceptions. So even if they made themselves unclean by touching a dead body, they would be expected to help. Jesus was always a great one for helping, wasn't he? And the lawyers would have known that was the law. So how do we apply this to ourselves? It's no good having a lot of teaching, is it, unless you can actually apply it and know how to go ahead with it. So what is our way ahead with neighbours? Remember the little armbands that children or youngsters used to wear for WWJD? What would Jesus do? That's a very, very good way of assessing any situation. How would Jesus have handled this situation? What interpretation would he have put on things? Jesus gives us the example. Right back at the beginning I said, learning to imitate Jesus. Learning to imitate Jesus and what he didn't taught. Remember, we're not made right with God by our own actions. In Isaiah 64 it says, all our righteousness is filthy rags. We can't be righteous. The law can make us aware of that. But our righteousness is as filthy rags. Now, are you bound up by rules and regulations? There's a difference between bound up and obeying them. I saw many, many situations where probably I had to bend the law to give somebody the benefit of the doubt or look after somebody. It wasn't unknown that I ended up praying for somebody that I'd arrested in a cell. I don't know if you could do that nowadays. I'm not sufficiently woke for that sort of thing. I wouldn't fit in nowadays. But are you bound up by rules and regulations? Does it affect your attitude to God and to other people? And does that affect you going on and being sanctified? We've come back to this word we had in the first slide. Being sanctified, being made more holy, being made more like Jesus. If it's in the way, get rid of it. As you said right at the beginning, you are justified. You're justified through Jesus, not through anything you've done. You are made right with God. That's what justified means. And let your way of life show it as you interact with your neighbours. Who is your neighbour? Anybody you come across, isn't it? Simple as that. Really is. Very important. Well, I hope I haven't gone too much on about the law, but it was I just wanted to pick up on the passage you quoted, Jenny. Because when Jesus said to Peter, as a quick Hebrew lesson, Greek lesson, he said, "Peter, do you love me?" And Jesus used a word that means a self-sacrificing love. Peter said, "Lord, I'm your friend." Jesus said, "Peter, do you love me?" A self-sacrificing love. "Peter, Lord, I'm your friend." Peter, "Are you really my friend?" And I can understand why Peter got really upset then. Yeah. He'd already told Jesus he was his friend, but Jesus was pushing him to the point, and he was restoring him.
Three
denials in the by Pilate, and then he was restoring Jesus. Yeah. Good.